knowing there were other planets, inhabited and inhabitable, in the galaxy, they mounted one of the most serious exploratory expeditions. Eventually, they penetrated your solar system, first visiting Mars, which was known to be inhabitable and which, at that time in fact, was inhabited. The human beings on Mars had no technology but, by contrast, they were spiritually, highly evolved. They were very small people measuring in height between 120 centimeters and 150 centimeters, and of mongoloid type. They lived in tribes, in huts of stone. The fauna on Mars was scarce. There was a kind of dwarf goat, some very large hare-like creatures, several species of rat, and the largest animal resembled a buffalo but had a head like a tapir. There were also some birds and three species of snakes, one of which was quite venomous. The flora was also poor, trees attaining no more than 4 meters in height. They had too, an edible grass that you might compare with buckwheat. The Bacaratinians conducted their research, realizing soon that Mars was also cooling down at a rate which indicated that it would no longer be inhabitable in 4 to 5 thousand years. In terms of its flora and fauna, it was barely rich enough to sustain those already living there, let alone cope with an emigrant mass from Bacaratini. Besides, the planet did not appeal to them. Thus, the two spacecraft headed for Earth. The first landing took place where Australia is now found. At that time, it should be explained that Australia, New Guinea, Indonesia and Malaysia were all part of the one continent. A strait existed, about 300 kilometers wide, exactly where Thailand is now found. In those times, Australia possessed a great inland sea fed by several large rivers, so that diverse and interesting flora and fauna flourished there. All things considered, the astronauts chose this country as their first immigration base. I must say, to be more precise, that the black race chose Australia and the yellow people established themselves where Burma is now. Here too, was a land rich in wildlife. Bases were quickly set up on the coast, on the Bay of Bengal, while the black people constructed their first base on the shores of the inland sea in Australia. Later, further bases were established where New Guinea is presently located. Their spacecraft were capable of superluminal 1 speeds and took approximately 50 of your Earth years to bring 3,600,000 black people and the same number of the yellow race to Earth. This bears witness to the perfect understanding and excellent association between two races determined to survive on a new planet and exist in peace. By common agreement, the aged and infirmed remained in Bacaratini. The Bacaratinians had explored all of the planet Earth before establishing their bases, and were absolutely persuaded that no human life existed before their arrival. Often they thought they had located a humanoid form of life, but on closer inspection, realized they had made contact with a species of large apes. Footnote 1. Superluminal speeds, speeds that exceed the speed of light. Original text superlight speeds, editor's comment, gravity on Earth was stronger than on their planet and it was quite uncomfortable initially, for the two races, but eventually they adapted very well. In building their towns and factories, they were fortunate to import from Bacaratini, certain materials which were very light and, at the same time, very strong. I have not yet explained that, at that time, Australia was on the equator. Earth rotated on a different axis, taking 30 hours and 12 minutes to complete a rotation, and achieved a revolution around its sun in 280 such days. The equatorial climate was not as you will find it today. It was much more humid than now, for the Earth's atmosphere has changed. Herds of huge zebras roamed the country, in company with enormous edible birds, referred to as dodos, very large jaguars, and another bird measuring almost 4 meters in height, which you have called Deinornis. In certain rivers, there were crocodiles up to 15 meters in length and snakes 25 to 30 meters long. They, at times, nourished themselves on the new arrivals. Most of the flora and fauna on Earth was totally different from that on Bacaratini, both from a nutritional and ecological point of view. Numerous experimental farms were established in an endeavor to acclimatize plants such as sunflower, maize, wheat, sorghum, tapioca and others. These plants either didn't exist on Earth or else existed in such a primitive state that they couldn't be consumed. The goat and the kangaroo were both imported, for the immigrants were quite partial to these, consuming them in great numbers on their planet. They were particularly keen to raise kangaroos on Earth, experiencing enormous difficulties, however, in acclimatizing them. One of the main problems was food. On Bukaretini, the kangaroo fed on a fine, hardy grass called arilu, which was totally unknown on Earth. Each time the Bukaretinians tried to grow it, it died, attacked always by millions of microscopic fungi. So it happened that the kangaroo were hand-fed, so to speak, for several decades, as they gradually adapted to the grasses on Earth. The black race persevered in its endeavors and finally succeeded in growing the plant, but it had taken so long that the kangaroos no longer required more than their new pastures. Very much later, some arilu plants took root and, as there were no animals to eat them, they spread throughout Australia. They still exist under the botanical name Xanthoria and the popular name grass trees *1. On Earth, this grass grows much taller and thicker than it did on Bukaretini, but that often happens when species are introduced from other planets. This plant is one of the rare vestiges of those distant times. It indicates, by being found only in Australia, along with the kangaroo, that the Bukaretinians remained in that particular part of the planet for a very long time before seeking to colonize other parts. I am about to explain this, but I wanted first to cite the examples of the kangaroo and the Xanthoria so that you might better understand all the problems of adaptation these people had to overcome. Of course, it is only one small example among so many others. The yellow race have settled, as I said, in the hinterland of the Bay of Bengal. Most were in Burma, where they too had established cities and experimental farms. Principally interested in vegetables, they had imported from Bukaretini cabbages, lettuce, parsley, coriander and some others. For fruit, they brought the cherry tree, the banana and the orange trees. These last two were difficult to establish, for the climate of the time was generally colder than it is now. Thus, they gave some of the trees to the blacks who, by contrast, had enormous success with them. In the same way, the yellow people had far greater success in the growing of wheat. In fact, the wheat from Bukaretini produced enormous grains, around the size of a coffee bean, with ears measuring up to 40 centimeters in length. Four varieties of wheat were grown and the yellow race wasted no time in establishing a very high production level. Did they also bring rice to the planet? No, not at all. Rice is a plant absolutely native to Earth, although it was greatly improved by the yellow people on its way to becoming what it is now. To continue, immense silos were constructed and soon, commercial exchanges began between the two races. The black race exported kangaroo meat, dodos, which were prolific at the time, and zebra meat. In domesticating the latter, the blacks in fact produced breeds that were equal in taste to kangaroo meat and more nutritious. Trade was carried out using Bukaretini spacecraft, bases for these vessels having been set up all over the land. What you are saying, Thal, is that the first men on Earth were black and yellow. How is it then that I come to be white? Not so fast, Michel, not so fast. The first men on Earth were, indeed, the blacks and the yellows, but for the moment I will continue to explain how they organized themselves and how they lived. Materially, they were successful, but they were also careful not to neglect the construction of their immense meeting halls, in which they practiced their cult. They had a cult. Oh yes, they were all Takiani, which is to say, they all believed in reincarnation, something in the way present-day Lamaists do on your planet. There was much travel between the two countries and they even combined efforts to explore deeper into certain regions of Earth. A mixed group of blacks and yellows landed one day, on the tip of South Africa, now called the Cape of Good Hope. Africa has changed very little since those times, apart from the Sahara, the northeastern area and the Red Sea, which didn't exist then. But that is another story we will get to later. At the time of the exploration, they had already been established on Earth for 3 centuries. In Africa, they discovered new animals such as the elephant, the giraffe and the buffalo, and a new fruit that they had never before encountered, the tomato. Don't imagine, Michelle, that this was the tomato as you know it today. When discovered, it was the size of a very small currant and very acidic. The yellow people, having developed great expertise in such things, undertook to improve the tomato over the succeeding centuries, just as they did with rice, until it became the fruit you are now familiar with. They were equally surprised to find banana trees that, at first sight, resembled those they had imported. They had no reason to regret their efforts, however, for the African banana was practically inedible and filled with large seeds. This African expedition comprised 50 blacks and 50 yellows, bringing home elephants, tomatoes and many mongoose, for they soon discovered the mongoose to be the mortal enemy of snakes. Unfortunately, they also brought with them, without realizing it, the terrible virus which is now called yellow fever. In a very short time, millions of people had died, without their medical experts even knowing how the sickness had spread. Since it is mainly spread by the mosquito, and since there are many more mosquitoes in equatorial climates where there is no winter to reduce their numbers, it was the blacks in Australia who suffered most. In fact, they counted 4 times more victims than the yellows. The yellow race on Bakaratini has always been superior in the field of medicine and pathology. Nevertheless, it took many years before they discovered a remedy for this curse, during which time hundreds of thousands died in terrible suffering. Eventually, the yellow people produced a vaccine that was immediately made available to the blacks, a gesture that reinforced the bonds of friendship between the two races. What were they physically like, these blacks? When they migrated from Bakaratini, they were about 230 centimeters tall, their women too. They were a beautiful race. The yellow people were smaller in size, the average man measuring 190 centimeters and the women, 180 centimeters. But you said that the present-day blacks are the descendants of those people. Why is it they are now so much smaller? Gravitation, Michelle. Being stronger on Earth than on Bakaratini, both races gradually became smaller in size. You also said that you are able to help people in trouble. Why did you not give any assistance in regard to the yellow fever outbreak? Was it that you weren't able to find the vaccine either? We could have helped. You will realize our potential when you visit our planet, but we didn't intervene because it wasn't in the program that we had to follow. I have already told you, and I can't repeat it often enough, we can help in certain situations but only so far. Beyond a certain point, the law strictly forbids aid of any kind. I'll give you a simple example. Imagine a child who goes to school each day in order to learn. Returning home in the evening, this child asks for assistance with his homework. If his parents are smart, they will help him understand the concepts involved so that the child can complete his task himself. If, however, his parents did his work for him, he wouldn't learn much, would he? He'd have to repeat each year and his parents would have done him no favors. As you will see later, although you know it already, you are on your planet in order to learn how to live, suffer and die, but also to develop spiritually as much as you can. We'll come back to this point later when the Thari speak to you. For now, I want to tell you more of these people. They overcame the curse of the yellow fever and spread their roots deeper on this new planet. Not only was Australia heavily populated, but so was the area now known as Antarctica. Of course, in those days, its position meant that its climate was temperate. New Guinea was also densely settled. By the end of the yellow fever scourge, the blacks numbered 795 million. I thought that Antarctica was not really a continent. At that time, It was attached to Australia and very much warmer than now, since Earth rotated on a different axis. The Antarctic climate was more like southern Russia is now. Did they never go back to Bakar-18e? No. Once established on Earth, they made strict rules that no one would return. What became of their planet? It cooled down as predicted and became a desert, much like Mars. What was their political structure like? Very simple, election, by raised hands, of the leader of a village or district. These district leaders elected a town leader as well as 8 old people chosen from among those most respected for their wisdom, common sense, integrity and intelligence. They were never selected on the basis of wealth or family, and all were between 45 and 65 years of age. The town or regional leaders, a region comprised 8 villages, had the role of negotiating with the 8 old people. The Council of 8 elected, by a secret ballot requiring that at least 7 voted in accord, a delegate to represent them at meetings of state council. In Australia, for example, there were 8 states, each of which comprised 8 towns or regions. At state council meetings there were thus, 8 delegates, each representing a different town or region. At a state council meeting, presided over by a great sage, they discussed the type of day-to-day problems that confront any government, water conveyance, hospitals, roads etc. In regards to roads, both the black and the yellow races used very light vehicles, with a hydrogen motor, which travelled above the ground, thanks to a system based on anti-magnetic and anti-gravitational force. But, to get back to the political system, there was no such thing as a party, everything being based solely on reputation for integrity and wisdom. Long experience had taught them that to establish an order that would endure, required 2 golden ingredients, fairness and discipline. I will speak to you some other time of their economic and social organization, and give you an idea now, of their system of justice. A thief, for example, genuinely considered to be guilty, was branded with a red-hot iron on the back of the hand he or she ordinarily used. So, a right-handed thief was branded on the right hand, a subsequent offense resulted in the left hand being cut off. This is a practice that still occurred quite recently among the Arabs, a practice conserved throughout time past. If he or she continued to steal, the right hand would be cut off and the forehead marked with an indelible symbol. Without hands, the thief was at the mercy and pity of his family and passers-by for food, for everything. Because people would recognize the symbol as that of a thief, life became very difficult. Death would have been preferable. In this way, the thief became a living example of what happened to a habitual offender. Needless to say, theft was a rare occurrence. As for murder, this too was rare, as you will see. Accused murderers were taken to a special room and left alone. Behind a curtain, a mind reader would be installed. This was a man who not only possessed a special telepathic gift but who also cultivated that gift in a constant endeavor, in one or another of the special universities. He would intercept the thoughts of the supposed murderer. You are going to retort that it is possible, with training, to make one's mind blank, but not for 6 hours at a stretch. Further, at various times when he or she might least expect it, certain predetermined sounds would be heard, obliging the subject to break concentration. As a precautionary measure, 6 different mind readers were used. The same procedure was applied to witnesses for the prosecution or defense, in another building some distance away. Not a word would be exchanged and, on the 2 following days, the procedure would be repeated, this time for 8 hours. On the 4th day, all the mind readers submitted their notes to a panel of 3 judges, who interviewed and cross-examined the accused and the witnesses. There were no lawyers or juries to impress. The judges had before them all the particulars of the case, and wanted to be absolutely sure of the guilt of the accused. Why? The penalty was death, Michel, but a terrible death. The murderer being thrown alive to the crocodiles. As for rape, which was considered worse than murder, the punishment was even more cruel. The offender was coated with honey and buried to the shoulders in the immediate vicinity of an ant colony. death, at times, would take 10 or 12 hours. As you will now understand, the crime rate was extremely low among both races and, for this reason, they had no need for prisons. Don't you consider that excessively cruel? Consider the mother of a 16-year-old girl, for example, who was raped and murdered. Doesn't she endure, in the loss of her child, cruelty of the worst kind? She did not provoke or seek her loss, but she must suffer. The criminal, on the other hand, is aware of the consequences of his actions, thus, it is just that he be punished very cruelly. As I have explained, however, criminality was almost non-existent. Returning to religion, I said earlier that both races believed in reincarnation, but there were variations on their beliefs that, at times, divided them. Certain priests diverted masses of people to group them, under their leadership, in these variant religions. The divisions that resulted among the blacks had disastrous repercussions. Eventually, about 500,000 blacks emigrated in the wake of their priests, to Africa, to the area where the Red Sea is now. At that time, the Red Sea did not exist and the land was African. They began to construct villages and towns, but the political system as I described to you, which was fair and effective in all respects, was abandoned. The priests themselves elected the heads of government, so that these leaders became, more or less, puppets manipulated by the priests. From that time on, the people had to face many of the problems that are so familiar to you on Earth at the present time: corruption, prostitution, drugs and all manner of injustices. As for the yellow people, they were very well structured and, in spite of some slight religious distortions, their priests had no say in the affairs of state. They lived in peace and affluence, quite different from the secessionist black race in Africa. And in regard to arms, what sorts of weapons did they have? It was quite simple and, as simplicity is often superior to complexity, it worked wonderfully well. Both races brought with them what we could call laser weapons. These weapons were under the control of a special group which, in turn, was under the direction of the leaders of each country. By common accord, each race had exchanged 100 observers whose presence was permanent in each foreign country. These observers were ambassadors and diplomats for their own countries, at the same time, ensuring that an arms excess did not occur. This system worked perfectly and peace was maintained for 3,550 years. The blacks who emigrated to Africa, however, had not been allowed to take these weapons with them, being, as they were, a secessionist group. Little by little they spread further, settling the area that is now the Sahara Desert. In those times, it was a rich land with a temperate climate, providing a well-vegetated habitat for many animals. The priests had temples constructed and, to satisfy their desire for wealth and power, they taxed the people heavily. Among a people who had never before known poverty, there now formed two distinct classes, the very rich and the very poor. The priests, of course, belonged to the former, as did those who helped them to exploit the poor. Religion became idolatry and the people worshipped stone or wooden gods, offering sacrifices to them. It was not long before the priests insisted that the sacrifices must be human. From the beginning of the secession, the priests took pains to ensure that the people were kept in ignorance to the greatest extent possible. By lowering their intellectual and physical level of development over the course of years, the priests were better able to maintain domination over them. The religion which had developed had absolutely nothing in common with the cult that had originally inspired the secession, so control of the masses was essential. Universal law decrees that man's principal obligation, regardless of which planet he happens to inhabit, is to develop his spirituality. These priests, by degrading an entire nation through keeping them in ignorance and leading them with lies, infringed this fundamental law. We decided at this point to intervene, but, before doing so, offered the priests a last chance. Using telepathy, as well as a dream, we contacted the great priest. Human sacrifices must cease and these people must be led back to the right path. Man exists physically for the sole purpose of developing spiritually. What you are doing contravenes universal law. The great priest was terribly shaken and, the next day, called a meeting of his priests, telling them of his dream. A few among them accused him of betrayal, others suggested senility, and some suspected hallucinations. Eventually, following several hours of discussion, 12 of the 15 priests who formed this council remained determined to preserve the religion as it was, claiming that the ideal was to maintain control and to promote the belief in, and fear of, vengeful gods whose representatives they were on earth. They didn't believe a word of what the great priest had told them regarding his dream. Sometimes our position is very delicate, Michelle. We could have appeared with our spacecraft and spoken directly to the priests, but they were able to identify vessels from space, having had them too, before the secession. They would have attacked us immediately, no questions asked, for they were very suspicious and fearful of losing their preeminence within their nation. They had formed an army and possessed quite powerful weapons, to be used to counter possible revolutions. We could also have destroyed them and spoken directly to the people in order to lead them back to the right path, but, psychologically, this would have been a mistake. These people were accustomed to obeying their priests and would not have understood why we interfered in the affairs of their country, thus all would have been spoiled. So it was that one night we flew above the country at an altitude of 10,000 meters in one of our tool spheres. The temple and the holy city were situated about 1 kilometer from the town. We woke, by telepathy, the great priest and the two acolytes who had followed his advice, making them go, on foot, to a beautiful park, 1.5 kilometers from the holy city. Then, by collective hallucination, we had the guards open the jails and release the prisoners. Servants, soldiers, in fact, all the inhabitants of the holy city, with the exception of the 12 evil priests, were evacuated. Inspired by strange visions in the sky, everyone ran for the other end of the town. In the sky, winged personages hovered around an enormous incandescent cloud which shone in the night. How is that done? Collective illusion, Michelle. Thus, in a very short time, it was arranged that only the 12 evil priests remained in the holy city. When all was ready, the tool sphere destroyed it all, including the temple, by means of the same weapon that you have already seen in action. Rocks were shattered and walls crumbled to a height of 1 meter, that their ruins might bear witness to the consequence of this sin. Indeed, if they had been totally effaced, men would soon have forgotten, for men easily forget. Further, and for the edification of the people, a voice issuing from the incandescent cloud warned that the anger of God could be terrible, much worse than they had seen, and that they must obey the great priest and follow the new way which he would show them. When it was all over, the great priest stood before the people and spoke to them. He explained to the poor wretches that he had been wrong, and that it was now important that everyone strive together to follow the new way. He was assisted in his work by the two priests. Of course, times were often hard, but they were aided by the memory and the fear of the event that had destroyed, in a matter of minutes, the holy city and killed the evil priests. Needless to say, this event was considered by all to be a miracle of the gods, for it also involved the liberation of more than 200 prisoners who were to face human sacrifice the next day. All the details of the incident were noted by the scribes, but they were also distorted in the legends and tales passed on through the centuries. Nevertheless, the immediate consequence was that everything changed. The rich who had previously had a hand in the exploitation of the people, now, in view of what had happened to the evil priests and the holy city, were fearful of meeting a similar fate. They were considerably humbled and assisted the new leaders in instigating the changes required. Gradually, the people became contented again, as they had been in times prior to the secession. Inclined towards pastoral rather than industrial or urban pursuits, they spread throughout Africa during the course of the centuries that followed and numbered, eventually, several million. Nevertheless, towns were only established in the area where the Red Sea is now, and along the banks of a large river that flowed through the center of Africa. The people managed to develop their psychic abilities enormously. Many were able to travel short distances by means of levitation, and telepathy resumed its significance in their lives, becoming commonplace.